We have one more hour of Braden Gall hanging out with us on the show. It's been fantastic having him on 4 days this week. He's down for one more hour from 440 Sports. You can check him out, 440 Sports, all of his great work with his colleagues at 440 Sports there. We start the hour. There's a couple of interesting things going on with the NFL. You just heard Joe Hunt talking about this. If you see like a really nice car with a bunch of big NFL looking guys racing towards a Walgreens near you, it's NFL players taking their teammate to get vaccinated. So they cannot get docked a salary for a week if they are unable to play a game. But the NFL dropping that bombshell today, you will have to forfeit if you are unable to put a team on the field. There will be no makeup week scheduled. A lot of financial ramifications being thrown out there by the NFL. Also, we're going to talk about this potential SEC expansion, which it's not even potential anymore. It's this, the ball is rolling. All the non-knows yesterday from people told you everything that you needed to know. Then you knew it was happening yesterday when no one would categorically deny it in any way, when they just said things like, we don't talk about rumors. Well, that told you your yes. And we teased this at the end of last hour. Maybe we can talk about this some more, maybe in the last segment. But Washington State football coach Nick Rolovich, this came out today, not at Pac-12 media days, not vaccinated, and didn't offer the reason why. It's everybody's personal choice. But this is a college football coach who has not got the vaccine. This will be a very interesting story because it seems like all leagues are going to the you will forfeit if you can't play model, and you've got a coach who – Braden, you played ball. Coaches get in your face. I never had coaches that didn't get in my face. What's Nick Rolovich going to do?
Well, and this is, again, this is like a far more complicated conversation because it's not, this is where you get into like, you could go into the Twitter weeds real fast and start arguing with, it's a bunch of like non-experts arguing with each other about like, well, transmission and well, what about this? And they're young, they're not at high risk. And it's like, well, like none of that. It's so much easier just to say to people like, you know, you probably just need to get a vaccine. If you're going to play this, if you want to do X, you need to do this. And so, again, there's plenty of places in the history of this country in courtrooms where it's been decided that that's very much legal. So I think the NFL is taking it that step about not paying the players. That seems, you could argue that's a little draconian, that's a little harsh, that's a little heavy-handed, but you know they just want every game to happen and they want to pay you, and so I don't know. It's just that one I'm torn on because I, not to get like, again, like Sankey said, this is not a political football, but there are some people that are vax hesitant, and there's lots of, like you said, lots of reasons why somebody might not want to do X, Y, or Z. If you're just sort of like the people that believe in like the microchips being inserted into your bloodstream, then I got nothing for you. But there are plenty of people that are sort of on the fence. And if a guy's going to take away your paycheck, it seems like that might be a good reason to maybe get off sitting on the fence and get the job done. I am curious, and this is a, I'd like to know what this, like Greg Sankey called it, if you're not healthy. That was the phrase he used. He said, if your football team is not healthy and you cannot play, I don't think we have those numbers yet from anybody. Have you seen them? Like, I have not seen the NFL put out a, here's what you need to have to play a game.
The threshold?
Not even just, yes, the threshold, absolutely. But also, you know, if you did have an outbreak, how many days ago? What, like, there's so many details that go into sort of creating those guidelines. I just want the fans to have access to all those guidelines, right? Like because otherwise what you create is this situation where the SEC just says, oh, Tennessee's going to forfeit this game. And then we all go, well, what do you mean? Why? Like he says, well, they're not healthy enough. Well, what does that mean? You know, like, was it a Monday thing? Was it a Thursday thing? Was it unvaccinated player? Like I just want everyone to understand the rules as clearly as possible on the front end. And I don't think that's asking too much.
I don't think it is either. Transparency is never a bad thing. Steve, we're going to get to Steve in just one second here on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. We were talking about this yesterday, and I said, look, if you ever have a question, why would they do that? The answer is money. Literally, I don't. If it involves sports, if it involves college athletics or pro sports, the answer is money. anything. Like, why did they put 6 rolls of toilet paper in the bathroom instead of 7? I don't even know what, because of money. Everything is money. Here's the other thing. As much as we all love football, to the eyes of the people at the very top of the food chain, where all the money dribbles down from, football is only a TV show. And they have to create X number of TV programs per year, and they don't want to miss any TV programs. And to us, it's life and death, and you wear the same shoes because they're lucky, and you sweat, and you freeze, and you, it's a TV program to a guy in New York sitting in a big office. He just wants TV programs with the NFL logo attached to them. That's all he cares about, TV programs. So they're going to get their, by gosh, TV programs on every week. That's because they're TV programs, and they're really highly rated.
They're selling widgets, guys. It's not, I mean, that's every time you sit down and watch from noon to three, you just consumed a widget, an NFL widget like that. Like, yep. We can go back to Econ 201 on this. It's all about inventory. I agree. And now I'd like to think that there is some concern for the health and safety of the student athlete on the college level.
Yes.
Which Greg Sankey talked a lot about in his opening statement. I'm hesitant to believe everything he has to say. I think he has great intentions. I think a lot of student athletes' injuries, because I've known a lot of them, I think they can slip through the cracks, but I think they have good intentions. We know the NFL doesn't care. The NFL is like, we don't care about your health and safety. We're paying you a whole lot of money to risk this stuff. This is why you're going to perform, because we have to, like you said, we have to sell, you know, whatever, 16 widgets a weekend. We've got 16 widgets a weekend we've got to sell to our advertisers, and that's all that matters. And you're right, that it's completely about money.
Let's get Steve on from Nashville, who wants to talk about this COVID and NFL. Steve joins us again via the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. Steve, man, appreciate you listening. Appreciate you calling. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. First of all, just on the money issue that was just mentioned, if anybody doesn't think it's all about money, look in the Tokyo Olympics, as they're having to drop fans, they've got advertisers dropping out. They could lose billions of dollars because of the COVID protocol. So you're exactly right. It's all about the money. Now, you guys may not have the answers to this. They probably haven't put us enough details, but I have a couple of quick questions. One, if I'm an NFL player and I get vaccinated, and like we're seeing cases all over the country, including folks that flew to Washington from Texas, I still catch COVID, even though I've been vaccinated. Do I get punished? Do my teammates get punished? Do we have to pay the price of not getting paid when I've done what you forced me to do and got the vaccination? Second, the CDC says 11,000 people have died after getting this vaccine. If I'm an NFL player, I get the vaccination, I die, does my estate get to collect my remaining salary from the team that forced me to take the vaccine that killed me? And third, when they start talking about college athletics, I think if you'll call over to Vanderbilt's neonatal intensive care unit, the pediatric units, they're seeing women of childbirth years having mid-month menstrual. They're losing babies before birth. If I'm a female college athlete of birthing years and I have later complications because I took the vaccine, do I get to sue the University of Tennessee for $1 billion?
Well, the 11,000, and I appreciate the call. I'll call a little bit of funny math on the 11,000. That 11,000 people have not died from the vaccine. Let's be very clear about this. That's not what killed those people. I think it's fair questions to ask. What does all of this? What does being healthy mean? We just talked about this, and this is the caller's question, which is, again, it's when you have the vaccine, and if you get COVID, which you still absolutely can get COVID if you have the vaccine, you're reducing your rate of hospitalization and transmission, all the stuff, right? The reason you get the vaccine is to protect yourself and other people around you, and so you are not susceptible to some of the testing protocols and some of the things. Like there's just different rules because you've been vaccinated, which means your transmission rate is lower and all these other things that, again, I'm not qualified to tell you about. Like, unless you are an epidemiologist, unless you are a doctor or a lawyer for, you know, the NCAA or for the NFL or on their medical staff, like, none of us are qualified to write these rules. So these smart, really intelligent people who care about all these things are writing these rules. And all I want to know as a fan of sports are, what are the rules? Like, tell us what the guidelines are. Well, is it, what does not healthy mean? That's what we need to know. Like when Greg Sankey says, if you're not healthy, you forfeit. What does that mean? That's what we need to find out. And again, if you are all vaccinated, you're not going to get tested, from what I understand, right? Testing protocols are far different if you're vaccinated versus not, because guess what? The vaccine stops you from going to the hospital, dying, or transmitting the disease. So like, again, I trust the people in charge to make these decisions and make these rules. We all should be trusting them to make these decisions and these rules. As long as every team knows all the rules on the front end, I just want the fans to know the rules too. Like, I just think we deserve to know what being healthy and what not being healthy means. Like, we deserve to know what those guidelines are. I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, and some of these things with a catastrophic outcome of some type, we will learn them in real time as they happen, because there's no precedent. You have to go back to 1919 for something like this, a pandemic. So some of these things we will learn in real time if someone is affected in a way that the caller laid out. I will say this, and I know we got to get to break to get Clark Lee on. Tom Pelissero. So to recap, if an outbreak of unvaccinated NFL players causes a game to be canceled, the infected team forfeits, they take a loss for playoff seeding, they face financial penalties and possible additional sanctions if protocols are violated. Players on both teams don't get paid. That's his summary tweet that leads with, if an outbreak of unvaccinated players causes. So there you go. That's from Tom Pelissero. He's been a Cracker Jack reporter on NFL stuff for quite some time. Clark Lee hopes to be a Cracker Jack coach for Vanderbilt. He joins us next. Blaine and Mickey, Braden Gall hanging out for the Hitman. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Braden Gall hanging out for the Hitman today from 440 Sports. Let's get to the head man down at Vanderbilt football, Clark Lee, who joins us now. Coach, I have to start out with this. Noted Tennessee Vol Ron Slay left SEC Media Days with some big impressions, and maybe the thing that hit him hardest was just how awesome your sports coat was yesterday. He spent 5 minutes with us talking about it earlier. So congrats on just having the most amazing fashion show in the whole week.
You know, it's funny because I'm probably the least fashionable coach in the league, but you know what? I've got good people around me, and they set me up for success, huh?
Well, I mean, that's, you surround yourself with the right people, right, Coach, in all aspects, and you're never going to look bad.
That's right. No doubt.
Well, and that's kind of where I want to start with you, Clark, is that, you know, how you're approaching this, it feels far more holistic in your approach to each individual student and athlete than maybe the vast majority of college football programs are approaching their individuals. Can you try to describe, like, how would you define and describe your approach to sort of looking at every aspect of a student athlete and how that can help you in terms of recruiting and development?
Well, I think, first of all, I appreciate your perspective, because that's exactly what we're doing here. And I made the statement yesterday, this is the best football program in the country. And that's exactly what I'm aiming at, right? It's this idea that, you know, as a parent, you can send your child here, know that they're getting a world-class education in a dynamic city that's going to set them up with a network to allow them to be successful long-term. But they're also going to be involved in a program that is going to be centered on holistic development, the development of the person. You know, we think that we coach people, not players, right? And if we can impact the person, we can change the player. But we don't try to take the other approach. And it is unique to Vanderbilt. It is something that you find here. At least our focus on that holistic approach, I think, is different. And that's what separates us. And over time, we have to stay patient and disciplined. You know, this program is for the university community, and the players involved in this program. It's not for anybody else. And so for us, it's about patience and discipline in our process, knowing that the compounding result of the focus on the development of each individual internally will deliver results that everybody will be proud of.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee joins us on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. Coach, you talked about taking control of the internal perception of your team. And I would imagine changing what people think about themselves and then letting that carry over to the outside world. What all goes into that process?
Well, I think first it's it's, you know, like we live in a world now where, you know, like opinions come and opinions go, and they crash on the shore, and they just kind of resolve back into the ocean. And, you know, what we have to do here is insulate from that, right? Because we can't allow, and it starts with me, we can't allow the opinions outside the program to impact how we view our experience here. And so you just, you don't put a wall up, but you just insulate, and you allow this program to become what it's meant to be, which is a place where we develop, you know, great teammates, great people, great competitors, and we prepare people for the long-term task of making impact in our communities. Once you get it insulated, once you kind of cease to allow, you know, the opinions of those outside to impact how we view our experience, it's just about steady messaging and teaching, right? Like it's not one statement, you know, that makes it happen. It's not the idea that, hey, we're going to earn jersey numbers here and, you know, no one has a number. I mean, that doesn't work in and of itself. It's the context of those things. It's the messaging around those things. And it's the consistency that we teach about team building and being a good teammate and how we explain why that's important and how that impacts our performance together. All that bound together becomes this experience that drives the internal perception. And then what happens once people start to be proud of what they're doing and what they're a part of, they start walking with their shoulders back and their chins up, and they start to understand, hey, they are important. I mean, and to me, that's a message I've carried to the team a few times this summer, is like, hey, you are very important here. And that doesn't mean that we're arrogant. That means that we understand when we meet people and we shake their hand and we introduce ourselves, we do that with confidence. We're representative of something that is right in this world, and we're the protectors of that every single day.
Obviously, a lot of sort of tearing down to build back up again and sort of fresh start, all that good stuff. But you have some pieces on offense that especially at quarterback, that certainly help when you step in to sort of rebuild a program like you're doing. Got a lot of weapons on offense, got a lot of experience at almost every position. So what is the goal with the quarterback, with the passing attack, where you know you have a strength? What is the goal as far as not changing things too much, right? They've worked their entire careers to get to a certain point, but also still doing what you're talking about, right? Tearing them down to build them back up again.
You know, it's interesting, because what do you sacrifice in making anything a short-term focus here in terms of the long-term ability to reach your potential as a program? And so I think for me, what was necessary in year one is that, you know, we do kind of zero out. I mean, I didn't make assumptions about anybody, and I wanted to make sure that the players knew that there was nothing that they were going to be judged on that had anything to do with past success or past failure. This is all about, you know, how we build anew from scratch. That is a mindset that we take to each day here. So, you know, we zero the day out, and we try to reach for what we want every single day. We talk about earning it every day. That's an approach that we take, because to me, that's what allows for people to unlock success for themselves long term. There's never a sense of arrival. There's never a sense of entitlement. And so as far as the offense goes, I mean, obviously Ken Seals was a starter last year. We feel like we have three guys going into fall camp that are competing for that job, and the person that ends up as a starter will have earned it. That can happen in the first week of practice. That can happen in the first day of practice, but more than likely, it's going to be through the course of our fall camp and our scrimmaging. And what I know to be true out of competition, the team is strengthened, and the person that ends up in that role will have benefited from the fact that he's had to push himself. You know, as far as the other offensive experience returning, what I'm really interested in is to see, you know, who through the course of our training in the winter, spring, and now summer has unlocked another level of performance. So who is the guy that was waiting for this program to arrive, that needed this program to arrive in the manner in which it has, that's going to allow for them to reach their potential? And like, that's where it becomes so exciting. Every day is like Christmas Day as a coach, when you have an environment where people are just striving for their best, because you never know when that light goes off. And so it'll be interesting to see how this team matures through fall camp and what guys step up into roles where they become playmakers for us.
Coach, I know you don't have much time left. You got to leave right around 2:30, but I did want to ask you this just because I'm curious. You are so uniquely qualified. You played at Vanderbilt. A lot of guys who interviewed for the job probably didn't play there. I wanted to ask you this before we let you go. How much does your time as a player and existing and living on campus and in the SEC and in the college football world, you lived as a Vanderbilt football player, how much does that shape how you coach the Vanderbilt football team?
Well, it has a deep impact on me and my perspective and my responsibility, my sense of responsibility to this program. We've done a lot of football alumni events this summer, or as many as we've been able to fit in. But, you know, those are special to me because I'm looking at people who, over the course of their, well, first of all, they spent formative years here. They invested in this program. They're benefiting from the experience of having played football at Vanderbilt and gotten an education at Vanderbilt. And they're looking to me now as the person responsible to create a program that represents the level of competitiveness and success that they expect from Vanderbilt. And that's a huge responsibility. You know, like the great thing for me is when I talk to my team every day, you know, these guys will be in the same tent in 20 years at an alumni event talking about, you know, our time at Vanderbilt together. So I just view it differently. There's a permanence to my work here that I don't think you can experience unless you're at your alma mater. And what I know about Vanderbilt is that this is breeding grounds for the future leaders of our country. I mean, the people that we're working with every day are important and impactful, and they will be that way if we do our jobs properly. They'll have an impact for the rest of their lives. And so knowing that about my school, knowing all the greatness that exists on this campus, knowing the excellence that's represented by Vanderbilt University, I want desperately for this program to mirror that and to strengthen the Vanderbilt brand in our community in Nashville and beyond, and we can do that. And it's just a matter of me keeping a focus on what's most important and making sure that I'm growing these young people in this program every single day.
Clark, I feel like you're qualified to give us some book reading recommendations here. Like, you got some Seth Godin on the shelf. You got some Art of War. You got some Atomic Habits. Like, what? Well, give me some leadership books that Nashville needs to read.
So one of my favorites that I'm looking at right now is Legacy. It was written about the New Zealand All Blacks. It's one that we teach out of a bunch. It kind of permeates our program. It's a great one. A Man's Search for Meaning is another Victor Frankl. It's on my shelf. These are books that I like to keep around that I actually share with our players. I try to keep some in stock where I can, you know, depending on what's going on in the world of the player that I'm speaking with, I can share a good read. Because sometimes coaching is one thing, but it's the work they do away from the building that is most impactful. As far as other books, you talked about Atomic Habits. That's one that I've grown to love. The Power of Habit is one. And I'll give you one more that was, I thought, phenomenal and that I use a bunch. A Man Watching. It's about Anson Dorrance at the UNC women's, the man watching, I should say, the UNC women's soccer coach. That learning about his program and how he built it is fascinating. And there's just a lot of really good competitive cauldron conversation in that book that's a fun read.
Coach, I feel like we've had a cauldron of conversation here with you today, and it's been awesome. And I look forward to the next time that we can have you on. And just promise this, no matter what you got on, come and hang out with us in the studio one day. And even if you've got sweats on, wear the sports coat so we can see it in person with anything.
I will. Listen, maybe that becomes the sideline gear, you know? Like, let's be honest, this is such a big hit. This may be the best thing I've done since I've become head coach, so I love it. That's perfect.
Well, Ron Slay endorses it. We'll have to get him one, too, although it's going to have to be pretty darn big to fit Big Slay.
That's right.
Coach, we know you're busy. SEC media days are over. It's time to put on the chin straps and snap them up and get rolling. So thank you for the time today.
Guys, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much. Y'all take care.
Yes, sir. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. You can follow him at coach_Lee.
Surprised that he had a bunch of leadership books ready to go? Are you surprised by that?
Hey, man, as soon as you started asking him that, you could hear him smiling through the phone. Yep. Seriously, I know what that sound sounds like. It's like they tell people in a mascot head, hey, smile under the mask, because people will know your body language when you smile is different. I could literally hear that rascal smiling through the phone as he's thinking, I've got so many books I can recommend here.
Yeah, well, and you can hear it in how he talks. Like, you can hear it in how he thinks. You can hear it in how he delivers his message. Like, go listen to Shane Beamer talk this week, and then go listen to Clark Lee talk. I'm not suggesting that one is going to win more games or that one's the right way or the other. They're just different personalities. And Shane Beamer, I'm not sure, took a breath in 18 minutes of talking on the podium. But that's how he recruits, right? Whereas you look at what Clark Lee does, everything is extremely measured, extremely tempoed, very, very thoughtful. I have no clue if it's going to work at Vanderbilt. Who knows? No one knows if it's going to work at Vanderbilt or not. But talk about a smart dude who's organized and has the leadership sort of, he's thought through everything, man. Like, Atomic Habits is a great read. I recommend it. Legacy, he mentioned about the New Zealand Football Club. Like, that's a really good book, too. So, you need some recommended readings. We need to get Clark Lee, he needs a list, right? He needs to put out a list of all the stuff he's reading.
We need to just start Clark Lee's book club. Let him call him once a week and just bust out, like, hey, it's chapter 7. Let's open it up there. Let's get started. You know, what did you think the protagonist was saying here? 100%. We got to load up a Clark Lee book club. I'll say this, and I was deeply embedded in a certain school and covering them, and then I went to work there once in my life. And a coach named Hugh Freeze showed up, and he was the offensive coordinator for a year. And the team won 4 games, and they'd won 4 games before that, and they hadn't had a winning season since 1995. And the coaches let go, and they made a decision to hire a guy named Hugh Freeze. And I get it. Some of you are saying, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. You know all about Coach Freeze. It's all very public. Everything's out there. But he took a team that had one winning season since 1995, and this was the year 2011, and they won 10 games. Because, like this whole Clark Lee thing, we're asking his own quote about saying, I'm changing the way they feel about themselves internally. We're taking internally and how we feel about ourselves. We're going to change that. And then he talked about guys leave the building. Their shoulders are up. Their chin is up. You know, they're a different guy. I saw 4-win dudes become 10-win dudes because Hugh Freeze made them believe in themselves. Yeah. And I saw a program that always found a way to lose. Always found a way to lose. I mean, watching, oh gosh, some Troy receiver with 37 seconds left after we just scored, run 77 yards or whatever it was for a touchdown, because that's how we were going to lose that game. And watching a coach come in and completely change the culture. And after he left, and I'll say it, and this is the third time I've said it this week, Arkansas State, after he left, a team that had not had a winning season from 95 to 2010, they won 10 games, 10 games, 8 games, 7 games, 9 games, 8 games, 7 games, 8, 8. And then last year they fell off the radar with COVID and everything else. But that's what one guy did in 1 year as OC and 1 year as head coach. So Clark Lee, the message that he's preaching, I get it. It's a hard place to win. It's a really hard place to win. But to me, that message of I'm going to build them up internally, because I know people are going to tell them whatever on Twitter. And I know what fans of other fan bases are going to tweet at them and tell them and yell at them from the bleachers. But I want them to know who they are. And I love the way he's teaching them.
Well, and being holistic and psychological and complex and thoughtful doesn't mean you're not going to yell at somebody, right? Like, like it doesn't change it. You know, how many Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100 companies, Fortune 50 companies have massive organizational psychology departments, right? Because they know that there it is actually better for their bottom line to have a happy, healthy, productive employee, because that person is going to be has much greater output. And so when you're talking about, you know, these words that are like kind of cliche, like, oh, the culture of the program, you know, like we in the media sort of throw them around fairly loosely when we talk about this stuff. But these coaches are 80% psychologist and teacher. Tim Corbin, do you think Tim Corbin is like preaching some revolutionary shift on the defense at Vanderbilt baseball? Or is he teaching the minds? Right? Like he's up here between the ears with all those kids. And so I think Clark Lee, you know, I'm with Brent on this. I was a Will Healy guy. I thought Will Healy would have been a great fit. I still think Clark Lee's a hell of a coach, and he's a really smart dude. And I think he's going about it the right way. I don't know if that means Vanderbilt's going to win 7 games every year, but I think they're going to pinpoint better players, be more efficient with recruiting, develop those guys better. And if that means they can be more competitive on Saturdays and they can win 6 games and get to bowl games, I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan, you go, sign me up, man. I'm there.
Yeah, 100%. That's the bar, is knocking your way to 6 wins and bowl wins. And I'm sure Clark Lee, if he's still listening, which I'm sure that he's not, but if he was, he'd say, you're totally wrong. I'm going to get more than 6 wins. In the interim, though, you go from 0 wins. We were saying this yesterday. What if you get to 3? That's a vast improvement. What if you get 3 more the next year? You're off and running if you're Clark Lee. We're off and running to our final segment of the show when we come back. So what would an SEC look like with Oklahoma and Texas? Who could dream something like that up? Well, the SEC Network actually did, and they have a graphic, and they explained it all, something that they categorically, well, didn't deny but wouldn't talk about yesterday. Their own network laid out how it's going to look. This is amazing. We'll tell you all about it next. Blaine and Mickey getting ready to wrap up the show for today. Really appreciate Braden Gall. Some great contributions this week. Again, at Braden Gall on Twitter, at 440 Sports. Is that right on Twitter? Okay.
Yeah, at 440 Sports. And like my wife kind of helped me name the company, and I was pretty happy that the construction work was finished when we started to launch the company.
Yeah.
Because now it has like positive connotations and everybody loves the road. But for most of my life here, 25 years here, that was not a good road to drive on, but now it is. So now we've got all the pods for you, you know, while you're driving around. On
positive connotations from 440 while driving on 440. Absolutely.
Right, there you go.
Speaking of the number 4, so this is so funny. Commissioner Sankey, it's a promo on our station. Is Greg Sankey getting asked by 3HL not once but twice about possible expansion and him just having nothing to say about it, about the potential addition of Oklahoma and Texas? And
talk about pods.
Yes. So absolutely. So you're thinking, well, I mean, he's not saying no. So that's pretty much a yes. But gosh, everybody started this. What's it going to look like? Well, the SEC Network this morning made a graphic of what this hypothetically could look like, which is just the ultimate trolling of everyone involved, that the network that is bossed by Greg Sankey would say, well, here's what it would, hypothetically, here's what it would look like. 4-team pods. That's right. A, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina. B, Tennessee fans, listen up. Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. C, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Got to keep Texas and Texas A&M apart for some reason, Braden. Maybe that would be part of the agreement. And pod D, just spitballing here. And pod D, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas. The Red River rivalry would stay intact. And that would include a 9-game conference schedule. I know you have thoughts on pods.
Well, I, first of all, if it ends up being divisions, I hate it. I hate it. If it's just pods and it's like no division at all, it's just 16 teams in a division, but they're just in these scheduling pods, right? To sort of try to keep it straight. Okay, I'd be fine. I'm okay with that. It still doesn't mean Tennessee gets a lucky bounce here, because what they're putting Tennessee in, that puts Tennessee as like the third program in that pod. And there are two studs in every one of those groups, and then there's like the third and fourth place teams, and they're putting Tennessee in as a third place team, which means, again, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee have all won a national championship in the last 25 years. So no other pod has that kind of clout involved, especially not Bama, obviously. But like, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, okay, two good programs, great programs, elite. And then you've got Missouri and Arkansas. Okay, sometimes they're good, most of the times they're solid. That's actually a tough pod, but a lot of history there with those programs, right? Which is good. Florida and Georgia, okay. And then Kentucky, South Carolina, okay. There's some balance there, right? Tennessee fans, I'd be upset about the scheduling pod where, you know, I like the rivalries, but I'm facing Auburn and Alabama every year where everyone else doesn't have to do that. I don't know. That, like, as far as the top programs in the league go, Tennessee, you could argue, would quote unquote get the worst draw if that was the format. Like, look at well, LSU's going to play Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and A&M every year. Like, A&M's good right now, but they haven't been historically. So I don't know. I hope it's not divisions. I hope it's scheduling pods and we have no divisions. Do away with all divisions. I want all 16 teams in one division, just like the ACC last year. Top two go to the championship game and be done with it.
Is this in all things? Like the NFL, you're okay with divisions there, right? You're leaning more towards, say, college sports.
So the reason, just college, and the reason I do that is because college athletics, it's impossible to legislate equal schedules. You just can't, because it's based on college football is segmented based on geography from 100 years ago. Like, that's why the Big Ten, the SEC, the Pac-12, like literally 1933, 10 schools close together in the Southeast put together. And then they kicked Swanee and Georgia Tech out in Tulane. But you cannot legislate competitive equity across college football. You just can't. In the NFL, it's all the schedules are equal. Like, it doesn't matter. So if you win a division, sure, maybe one's a little tougher this year than the next one was last year. But like, by and large, every division is about the same in the NFL. So your schedules are about the same. So I don't really – automatic bids are okay at that point. If you're going to start giving automatic bids to the ACC and to the Big Ten and to the Big 12 and to the Pac-12, they better be worth it. They better be worthy. So put the best teams in those championship games. I don't want a bunch of 7-5, 8-4 teams competing for playoff spots. That's not what the sport's supposed to be about.
Got 15 seconds left. Will there be a Big 12 in 3 years?
Yes, but it won't be a Power 5 league. It'll be a... it'll be like half and half, like the AAC.
Oh, there you go. Big shot from Braden Gall across the bow. Thank you, man. Fun week so far.
Yeah, man, it was awesome.
We got to do it again sometime again. Braden Gall at 440 Sports right now. We finished our leg of the race. It's time to hand the baton to Mr. Boom Boom Broom Ron Slay and Babs and Brent 3HL is next right here on 104.5 The Zone.